going on, everybody? Welcome once again to the Luke Capetta Show. I'm your host, Luke Capetta. I was supposed to have, first of all, Jeff can't do Wednesdays anymore. He's messing up the whole flow of things. We're gonna have to have a talk with him. Yag doesn't want to do it because he's out on the town. He's on like about 6 different dating apps. And Dennis was supposed to be here. Will Shire was supposed to be here, but he's having computer issues. But it doesn't matter because I have a guest who, fourth time on the show, is basically like, you're like the fifth Beatle at this point. It's the one and only Danny Faith Leonard. Hi.
Hi, happy to replace all of those people.
trust me, you're going to do a fine job. It's very easy. I just want to try this. I've never used this before, but I think you deserve this. Yes. Thank you, fake crowd.
That's great.
How are you?
I'm good. It's really good to see you. It feels normal. I wish that... it wasn't still on the other side of the computer.
Yeah.
Maybe back together in person soon.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really great to be here.
We don't even do the studio anymore because it's just like, well, you were there. It's not necessarily like a COVID friendly environment. It's like just a room with like no windows and shit. And you have like 8 people in there and it's like, nah, it's not very conducive to our new world that we live in. But technology is improving, so this is good, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I wanna start off the bat. Your show is coming back.
Yeah. I have my show Adult Sex Ed Tuesday night the 15th at 7 PM at Caveat. And it feels really good to, again, like a little bit of normalcy. This is a show that I've been doing since 2018. So,
best show ever.
Oh, thank you. Long break.
Yeah, right.
Shows. The last one I did was in June, June 30th, I think. And then the one before that was the day that everything shut down, March 13th, 2020.
That's right.
Or March 11th. I forgot.
Did you get to do the show?
I did. I was on stage finding out that New York was shutting down. It was like a really surreal experience to look back on because it was just such a strange turn of events. I remember distinctly, like, we didn't know if the show was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then I was backstage with my other guests. And it was Emma Willman, who's a great comedian, and Dulce Sloan from The Daily Show. And every time someone would go out on stage and come back, there would be like another bit of crazy news.
Wow.
Like I went out, I did my intro and I came backstage and they were like, Tom Hanks has coronavirus. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy.
That's right.
And then someone else would come out, like come back in and we'd be like, the NBA canceled the whole season. And by time it was the end of the show, which is only like an hour to an hour and a half long, we just knew that New York was shutting down. And it was very, you know, it was really surreal. And I remember that I went out all night with my friends knowing that that
this is the last hurrah. This might be it.
Yeah, but not like we thought it was going to be this long. We thought it was going to be like 2 weeks.
Yeah. That sounds like a beginning of like a Seth Rogen movie.
Yeah, like, I mean, so
everything
weird.
Shuts down, so like... You and Jonah Hill are on the town for like the whole night.
I mean, like, I part of me is like, of course that would happen to me. That makes a lot of sense.
Right.
That's where I would be and that's what I would be doing. But yeah, it feels really good to do this show again. And I'm trying to, you know, figure out what the next version of this show is. So this might be the last time I do this version of it at Caveat. And then I think that I would love to turn it into something bigger and better that reaches more people. So right before the pandemic, I was on the verge of doing that. And I had partnered with National Lampoon.
And I remember you saying, telling us about that.
And that had kind of went away during the long pandemic break.
Right.
And And what's great is that I can turn that show into whatever I want to turn it into. But it's cool that it has struck such a chord with people. And I love that people send me their kind of sex ed stories. And I love just, you know, having friends send me crazy articles that they read on the internet of people's sexcapades gone wrong. And like, I love that people think of me that way. It's really fun. Right.
Just what you said, like people send you articles they read on the internet. It just made me think. That's the first thing I thought of when you said, like, oh, Tom Hanks had COVID. Because you remember, I don't know if you heard this, but like the QAnons thought that like Tom Hanks was being arrested for being a pedophile. And
yes,
not that he, I mean, obviously, you know, he's not like, I'm just, but that was like the big, you know, oh, watch, it's going to come out. So,
how did they choose him?
Yes. I don't know. I don't know how they come up with anything. Like, just that random like date in August where like Trump was supposed to just take back the presidency. Like, he was,
oh my God.
Yeah. So bad. It's so bad. Yeah, it just made me think of that. But Caveat is a great place. Your show is amazing. I love it. Hopefully, I will be able to be there. I talked before I started recording. It all depends on 10-year-old basketball playoffs. If we make the playoffs, then I won't be able to be there. But we probably won't because we're pretty bad. My son's pretty good, though.
I hope that your son wins and you can't come to my show. But
I appreciate you saying that.
Even though I would love to have you there.
I appreciate you saying that. You're a very nice person, but like, that's not really, because I'm just going to spend we're going to get blown out by 60 points probably if we have to play on Tuesday. So I'm not looking forward to it. I actually kind of just want to tell the kids, like, hey, I'll buy you pizza if you lose on purpose. But that's not teaching them, you know. Sometimes you just gotta, you know, let life beat you down for a little bit.
You have to learn how to lose. And I feel like, you know, maybe that was a good COVID lesson also. I feel like there's been a lot of coming to terms with things not working out. It's not a bad thing to learn when you're 10.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know what? And yeah, this younger generation. Here, I'm going to sound very old, but this younger generation really needs to learn that, because I feel like they don't know that. And yes, I'm old and I don't care. Like, I know I sound like the bitter old get off my lawn guy, but whatever. All right, that's
when
it.
When you had competitions in school growing up, did they make both teams win, or were there,
no,
there was a winner and a loser?
Yeah, there was a winner and a loser, you know, but it wasn't like, that's so funny. Yeah, because no, there wasn't like a participation trophy. You got like, you know, you got like the normal, like, hey, you did a good job, but you know, you lost. It's all right. That happens. It wasn't one of these. It wasn't like the, like, yeah, like we're the winner, and like you beat kids down.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just, one thing that has struck me recently is I got into a conversation about, in elementary school, we had field day. I know it's called something different in every school, where red versus blue. And someone was telling me that at her school, it was always purple that won. And I was like, no, we had a winner and we had a loser.
Yeah.
And you had to accept it.
Yeah, hell yeah. Like, you went, like, I, like, skinned knees, like, bruised elbows. Like, you earned that shit. Like, yeah. It wasn't like that. But also, too, like, because I have grown kids too, and I watch them all play sports, and I've seen parents like be really, really rough with the, like, no participation trophies, and like, and I'm like, yo, they're 7. It's okay to just say like, hey, you did a good job, here's a trophy. Like, it's okay to make them feel good at 7. You know what I mean? Like, they, you know how long you have in life for it to like beat you down? Like, you could push it off a few years. It's not going to kill you.
I agree. Building up a kid's confidence is a really good thing.
Ooh, it's a snowflake thing.
No, it's not.
No, that's what I'm saying, but that's, you know, that's what I always get. Like,
yeah, I know.
You know, it's, yeah. So, man, so this might be the last time that you do this show this way, you're saying.
Yes.
So yes. People should definitely, if they like to see this show in this format at this venue, which is, you know, everything perfect. They need to get there. That now, like, I really feel like a sense of urgency to to be there and not just, you know, like sit on the couch anyway and just like hide from COVID.
I have great guests on the show, and it's some of my favorites that I've ever had. Mm. And I have a good partner for this one. A couple of months ago, I was hired to host a charity benefit for New York Birth Control Access Project. Mm-hmm. And I loved working with them so much then, and I love what they do. So I wanted to have them a part of this show. So a percentage of the proceeds are going to them. And they advocate for just more access to birth control. It's as simple as that.
Right.
And that's everything from lobbying to change legislation to putting condom vending machines in college campuses. So they're really cool. Right. Which, like, obviously, it should be easy to get condoms.
Yeah, it should, easy, right? You know? Yeah.
Well, it should be really simple. And I think they're really great. And the show is February 15th, which what I was recently told, and I think I didn't know this, is, you know, we know the 14th is Valentine's Day, mm-hmm. and the 15th is Mistress's Day, because someone who I know works at a really high-end restaurant in New York City.
Wow.
And the same men come in on the 14th and the 15th, because the 14th, they're with their wives, and the next day, it's the same men, but they're with their mistress.
Wow. Ah. That's expensive. Just to say the least. Just to, you know, breaking it down practically. That's expensive.
Yeah.
So, expensive. Damn. That's...
Shameless, too.
Right.
Not very creative. Not creative.
No. Not at all, man. Like, yo, guys, I feel like you got to step it up a little bit. Like, you can't...
Yeah. If I was one of those mistresses, I'd be pissed. You did this last night? No, but it's just, you know, you would think if someone's going through the trouble to have kind of a double life anyway.
Right. You would have a double life.
You'd make one of those interesting.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. You would have a double life. Like, the whole point is to not lead the same life.
Right.
Right.
Shit. I would think so.
Wow. That I've never heard that. That's that blew my mind. Holy shit. Well, okay. So, you know, take your mistress to see Danny's show.
Yeah. Or if you come to my show, you're basically my mistress.
Right.
Is how this goes.
You have a room full of mistresses on Mistress Day. Is that what that's called?
Yeah.
Oh, I've never heard that. That's amazing. Wow. That blew my mind. That really did. I don't even know where to go from there. Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you, because I saw you post about it, and I think I wanted to reach out and ask you, and I just didn't get a chance or whatever, but Big Vision Empty Wallet is no more.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, Big Vision Empty Wallet was my production company of 12 years. And we decided to close shop and move on to different things. And, you know, working with a business partner for 12 years who, you know, we work so well together, but right. It's also, you know, it's easy to feel after a while, like maybe you've stopped growing and maybe there's, other things out there that you should be exploring. And Alex Cirillo was my business partner. Mm-hmm. She's producing a gigantic show for ESPN, which is going to be great. And I wanted to focus more on my creative work, which is, you know, my comedy. And I have some films that I've written that I've been trying to get up off the ground. And I think it was a lot easier to do that while not still running a company, because right. We were a production company, but we were also running an incubator where we were supporting a lot of other people's work. And it became, you know, it was always a ton of work. Everything is,
right.
You know, everything is a lot of work. And I I'm looking forward to this next chapter. It was still bittersweet, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the early memories of that company, you know, in the early years, I met so many new people, mm-hmm. and we used to throw the best parties. And
is that what you're gonna miss the most?
Yeah,
the parties.
No, because we hadn't been doing that for a while. But right. in the first few years, if there was a reason to throw a party, we were doing it.
Like Michael Scott, The Office.
Yeah, we would create reasons, and
right.
it sometimes felt like every month there was another party. But it makes sense because it really started off being a community and we used to screen other people's films and mm-hmm. And you know make sure that people had a reason to come together and it was really great. So I have so many great memories, and so in that way it was kind of bittersweet. And when we posted it that we were shutting down the company, the messages that came in were so nice.
Right.
And, you know, there were people who went on their first date with someone who they've been married to for a long time, like at one of our early events. And there were, you know, there's someone who I know who was brand new to New York, and his first day in New York, he came to one of our events and made friends that he still has. And so all these people were posting these really nice things. It was nice to see.
Aw. And so are you done when... Is that finished already? Or you guys have moved uh-huh. on? Or, wow.
Yeah, it's finished already. And but the last film that we produced was a film called Coast.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
That's how you transition, people.
I didn't even mean to. It's just a natural transition.
Right.
Coast is a film that we produced, and it filmed a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. But will be released. It was just announced. It's going to be released on April 8th, mm-hmm. 2022. So I love that date, 4822. It's a good date.
Yeah.
And those are good numbers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's going to be a really fun release because it's a music driven film. Mm-hmm. It's a coming of age drama with live music performances in the film. And the music was composed by Christian Zucconi and Hannah Hooper, who are from the band Group Love, mm-hmm. Along with Alex Walker and a couple of other people and bands contributed to the score too. And so we're going to do really fun stuff when it's released, and the cast is a mostly young and like super awesome cast of people who are really fun to be around. So I'm excited for that.
When I saw that, I told you I signed up to try to get, I want to go to the premiere. Mm-hmm. I put my email in. I'm like, yeah, I want to be there.
Oh, awesome. So yeah, we're going to be in theaters in about 5 cities. And then
any in Jersey? I know New York, but
I don't know. I don't know yet.
Come on. You okay?
Sorry about that.
Sorry.
I'm getting over a cold. I have that like lingering cough at the end of it.
Right. That's all right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, New York is close for me, but mm-hmm. we always like when people show New Jersey love.
We'll see. We'll see. I don't think I get to choose that.
All right. Well, I'll just, you tell me who I have to talk to.
Okay.
I have an idea for a movie where I want to do like a take on 8 Mile, but I want to make it about Jeff's journey from growing up in Michigan to moving to New Jersey. I think that, what do you think? That'll sell, right? That sounds good.
Especially if he plays himself. like Eminem.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh man, right now, I wish he was here. He'd be like, oh really? Really? Like that's what you want to do? Yeah.
Himself all throughout the years too.
Right. But have the same like receding hairline, even when he's like 12.
Exactly.
Yo, he's gonna fucking kill me when he hears this. So, are you working on other films too? I remember like last time I talked to you, didn't you go like overseas looking at locations and stuff for your what was the name of that film too?
It's called Rush Island.
Yes, Rush Island. Yes.
I mean,
is that gonna happen?
Yeah, but the danger of talking about a project before it's happened is you might have a pandemic, and then all of a sudden it's
right.
Like 3 years later, and you're still talking about the same thing.
Right.
Right before this tonight, we had a Zoom table read of the most recent version of that script because I really rewrote it during the COVID times, which I think ultimately was a good thing. If it had filmed before, I think there were things about it that were kind of like very topical, very political. And over time, I've wanted to make it a comedy that will be a little bit more timeless.
Right.
It's a dark comedy, and it's about these three news reporters who are facing unemployment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of them has already like totally lost her career and the other two are about to, and they really need something that would kind of like be a hit that would reignite their careers. And they find out about this group of people who are living on an island that everyone thought was deserted. Mm-hmm. And their great, great grandparents washed up there in the 1800s during the gold rush. And these are their descendants. And they're still living like in an old Western town, but in the jungle. And these news producers decide to exploit the shit out of them on like a wild television show.
Right.
And then the rest of the film is this ride of what happens to all of these people who live on this island once they have access to quote unquote the real world.
Right.
Once they have access to information and
right.
you know, like eventually they get the internet and things like that. And it's sort of like the Truman Show meets Jumanji.
Mm.
And it's, you know, it's really, really fun. And not that long ago I rewatched the Truman Show. And I don't know if that's a movie that you've seen or that you've seen recently.
Great movie.
It feels like it was made yesterday.
Yes, it's so. I was just gonna say that it's
so
like
weird.
So far ahead of its time. Like it's and it's so relevant still.
Yeah. The only thing for me, because I just watched it, there's only one part that feels dated, and that is that people get together to watch TV, because now we only do that for sports. Like we don't get together in a group and watch TV anymore.
Well, maybe not even for sports anymore.
Yeah,
really,
that's
you know.
True. But other than that, that movie is just, it was so ahead of its time and predicted, I don't even know how they predicted exactly what was to come. So weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, I rewatched that and I realized that I want this movie to be a little bit more timeless too. So there were some things that I changed and I've had a great director come on board who I don't know if I'm allowed to say, so I won't.
Okay.
But I'm really excited. And right before the pandemic, we had gone to Cyprus. My producing partner on it, Mandy Ward, and I had gone to Cyprus, and which is like I think something that's so fun about filmmaking is you go to places and you do things that you never would have chosen. So like, I never would have chosen to go to Cyprus on a vacation just because I don't know anything about it, but I'm glad that I've been there and it's a great place to visit. And I do recommend it. It's so different. And it didn't end up working out there. So now we're back to, country shopping once again, and we'll see where it ends up. There's the contenders at the moment are New Zealand, Australia, Colombia, and then we've got like a few random places that we're looking at that we'll see if it works out.
Listen, countries, get on a ball. You want to be attached to this. I met your producer friend Mandy before. She was super cool. I want to get her on the show, and it just never happened. And well, I didn't even do the show. I only did like last year. I didn't do the show the whole year. I did like two episodes because it just got like, it was just so, you know, you get in that rut and then you're just like not leaving the house and you're not doing stuff. And then,
yeah,
you know, we didn't feel comfortable having people come to the studio because, you know, like it's, you know, small space and you got to worry about stuff. And
yeah,
you know, everybody's got families and, you know, it's just, I don't even want to think about it. It's depressing. But anyway, that's cool.
It was really hard to stay motivated during all of this.
Yeah, I mean, well, you sound like you did a good job of it. Like, kudos to you.
I don't know. I think there was a big hump to come over.
Yeah, I mean, like, I ate about, like, 15,000 pizzas and gained about 30 pounds. That was my productivity in the, you know. No, I'm just kidding. I did other stuff. I did, like, creative stuff myself. I like to be creative. Painted and did all types of cool stuff.
You also have kids and, you know, there's other things that take your attention.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, whatever. They don't appreciate anything. Yeah, they, I wonder, like, what their, like, sex ed is like now in school. Like, I don't really...
New Jersey has some of the best sex ed in the country.
Yeah, they're in Pennsylvania, though.
Oh, they're
Pennsylvania. I'm not sure. Yeah, Pennsylvania sucks.
I don't know what Pennsylvania's specific laws are, but the updated numbers on it are now it's 29 states mandate sex ed, and 15 states require it to be medically accurate.
That's
the number is still not good.
Yeah, that's so bad. It's when I was in high school, I was in middle school in New Jersey, and then I moved to Florida for 2 years, and then I moved back to New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And we had already, I remember having like, you know, like we had in our health class a certain part of the semester dedicated to, you know, sex ed. And it was, you know, pretty thorough and you know, what I would find out later, pretty accurate. And then I moved to Florida and it was, I don't even remember that much of it, but I just like, it was public school, but it was so like preachy, like basically right. You're just going to die.
That was kind of what I had in New York though, because in New York, it's not mandated and every district can do their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the problem with that is you could grow up in one town and be told real things, and you can grow up in the next town and just get, you know, abstinence only sex ed or, you know, whatever. And I think things are obviously different now because we have the internet.
Right.
You know?
Before, wish I had the internet back then.
I know. Oh my God, I know. I mean, before internet times, I feel like I learned a lot from my friends and I learned a lot from TV and movies.
Right.
But I also learned a lot at home because the whole reason why I started that show, Adult Sex Ed, was because my own experience was so funny. Because in school we learned like nothing. And then at home, my mom was a sex ed teacher. So, yeah, so we had all of these like very open conversations, and I had to watch a video when I was like 7 that explained everything to me, and I knew what a period was well before any of my girlfriends. And girls really like to share these things, and we're all kind of competitive about it. And I remember because I learned before everyone else, taking them all at recess and having everyone form a circle around me. And I was like, you're going to bleed. Just telling them, you know, what was going to happen later on in their lives. Because I thought I was so cool.
That's so funny. Wow. You're going to bleed. Like, oh my God, you probably terrorized them.
I guess so.
Wow. And then I remember
that we had a competition of like who was going to get their period first. And, you know, the girls are competitive in about first everything. I'm sure guys are competitive too, but
I don't know, man. I don't remember really like thinking all that much about it until like all of a sudden, like,
Who was going to get their first kiss? Who was going to see a dick? Like, I don't, these are the things that we vogue about.
Okay. I guess guys had, you know, their locker room talk, but I don't know. I mean, we don't get, we're further behind you. We're not that mature until like honestly. So like, I just remember like all of a sudden getting to a point where I was just like, oh, I'm just like a horny kid. Like that, like that was it. Like, it's just like one day I'm just like, yeah, just, hey, let's play Nintendo. And then I'm like, oh man, I want to see naked women. Like that's, you know, like it was like that. It wasn't, I don't know. So, I don't know. But yeah, I remember, I mean, I don't think she listens, so I can say this, but my oldest daughter, she just turned 25. And, I remember, like, it took her, like, a while. She was late getting her period, and it ended up being, like, getting to the time where I was like, oh, God, like, she's, like, I'm going to be out with her today. Is this going to be the day? Like, and, you know, I was a young parent. Like, I was, she was born, like, literally a few days before I turned 19 years old. And I was just, so even then, like, I think she was, like, 15. And I was like, oh, man, that's when it started. And sure enough, I was with her when she got it. And she's like, Dad. And I'm like, oh, God. Like, I had to call, like, my mom. I'm like, I would have literally rather have wrestled a bear than fucking than had that happen. But then she was just like, no, it's all right, Dad. Like, you know, let's just go to the store and get the stuff. I was like, okay, you drive. No, I wasn't that bad. But yeah, it was really. And, you know, I have two other daughters, but that was really, I don't even know, like, now thinking about it now, I'm just like, I don't understand, like, why I was so nervous and freaked out. I was more nervous about, like, not being able to help her properly or doing something wrong or making it, like, a bad experience for her and then, like, scarring her for life. I was really fucking stressed out about it.
I don't know, because female family members can do that, too. And I like the first time I got my period, I told my mom right away, and she smacked me in the face.
What?
And apparently, there's this like Russian Jewish tradition of like, I don't know why they do this, but when you get your period for the first time, they smack you on both sides of your face, and then your cheeks turn pink. And I don't know why anyone would think that that's a good idea. And also, no one told me about this tradition until it was happening. And then we had to go to a family party or some family gathering. So we went to my grandmother's apartment.
Right.
My grandmother smacked me in the face. My aunt smacked me in the face. Just like,
oh my gosh. And you didn't know you're just getting.
My dad was like horrified.
Oh my God.
It was just so weird. It was such a weird tradition. And I brought this up to my mom recently and she was like, yeah, I don't know why we did that. I don't know why that was a thing. You know, it's already traumatizing. Like, why would we make it worse?
Wow. I feel like that was developed by, like, a parent who had a bad kid and was just looking for, like, a reason to smack them. I could see, like, my, like, that would be something, like, my mom would think of, like, you just think of, like, a way to, like, smack my sister for no reason. Oh, yeah, it's a tradition. There you go. This for mouthing off to me. Wow, that's, how many smacks did you take before you realized, before they told you it was a tradition?
I think it was only three.
Only three? Oh my God, I thought you were going to say only one, and then they told you. It's like, by the third one, you're like,
oh. It was my mom, it was my grandma, it was my aunt, and then it was, and I don't remember this that well. I do remember that it happened.
Yeah, you can't remember. You probably don't remember. You probably had a head trauma after a while. Like, no, you only remember the first three. Wow.
Crazy.
That's amazing. I never knew that. That's amazing. What a great story. Well, I mean, like, great for me to hear. I'm sorry that you had to live that. But, you know, what? Wow. You know what's, this is just taking me back to, like, when I was just saying, did you watch, like, 90210 when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my God. So, I've been rewatching 90210.
Oh, my God. Is it bad?
It's so bad.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. So a friend of mine put me onto this podcast called, because I switched like careers. So now I'm like working in an office. I'm not outside doing construction anymore and stuff. Thank God. And so like now I just get to listen to podcasts and stuff all day. So put me on this podcast called Again With This. And, it started, they rewatched like 90210, and it's so funny and it's so good. And I'm like, this is really bad. They must be making this out to be worse than it was. And I've been rewatching it and it's so bad. But now like, I'm like, I can't stop watching it again. And it's so like, I feel so lame and dirty afterwards. I'm just like, I just get home from work, I would just watch 5 episodes of Dylan trying to choose between Brenda and Kelly.
Oh my God.
And this show was so bad that my mom would not, like, we only had one TV in the house for a long time, and there's like, we tried to watch it when it came out. My mom was like, didn't like the way the kids talked to their parents. And she's like, you're not watching that. So I didn't even get to watch it for like 3 years.
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to watch it. I did, though. I don't. Right. I mean, I guess I snuck it and I watched it. But there weren't that many things that I wasn't allowed to watch. That just happened to be on the list. I don't know why.
Oh, I mean, so bad. Oh, because I know why.
Have been with teenage sex, but I don't think that would have done it in my house.
Right. See, no, not in my, like, my mom was like really concerned about, number one, like the way the parents, the kids talked to the parents, and then like the also kids were fucking annoying. Like, she had to deal with that. Listen, like, when you're a parent, you gotta listen to that. You don't want to turn on a TV and then fucking hear that some more. You're like, get the fuck out of here, complaining about, like, you know. Sorry about that tangent, but I just had to. I had to share that.
I've rewatched a lot of things recently.
Anything good?
Other than the Truman Show being great,
right.
Home Alone is so good.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was just the holidays. I watched Home Alone. Mm-hmm. It's such a good movie. Except it's kind of a horror movie and treated like a comedy with kids. It's like, right, really horrifying.
Right.
And I do remember being afraid when I was young, not afraid, but like nervous for him of, you know, what's going to happen to Kevin. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know that it's plausible that the entire family would have forgotten about him.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's such a good movie.
Right.
There, like, the thing that I watched recently that is not good, or I'm not going to say not good, but it doesn't hold up well, mm-hmm, as far as Thump. That's the one,
really,
for me that
I haven't
holds
seen
up.
I haven't watched that in a long time.
Man, it's weird. I mean, first of all, you know, Jenna has sex with him.
Right.
And like, he doesn't have like his full, you know, he's not operating with a full tank.
Right, 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 right.
And, you know, and then, like, treats it like it's weird that he's become completely obsessed with her. I mean, she's, like, the only person around, and then only gives him the time of day once she has AIDS and needs someone to take care of her. It's really fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. Shit, yeah. I might have to rewatch that now. I haven't watched that
Among,
in a long time.
There are other things that are really messed up about it, but what made me rewatch it, and the same thing with Home Alone, is I love the show The Movies That Made Us on Netflix.
Yes. Yes.
I love it so much. So I ended up rewatching a lot of those movies after I would watch the episode that takes you through how they were made, mm-hmm, and essentially how much fun it was or how crazy it was to make it. So
Right. I watched that episode of Home Alone. Yeah, that was
the most creative one.
Yeah, that was great.
It blew my mind that they built the set of Home Alone in the high school from 16 candles in the pool so that they could flood it. It's like, that's only something that you would do if you didn't quite have enough money and you have to get creative. Mm-hmm. And I feel like things end up being so much better for it rather than if you just throw an unlimited amount of money at something, like creative stuff like that doesn't happen.
Right.
It just doesn't because no one needs to find the solution.
Right. You take the easy way out. You just throw money at it. Right. Do you find that, like, as a filmmaker yourself, that are you able to watch like films like that without maybe deconstructing, or do you find that you do that sometimes, or do you do both?
I do both, but it got easier taking this break from working. Mm-hmm. I did shoot something during the last summer. I shot something, but it still didn't, like, for whatever reason, it didn't take me out of this mode of actually just being able to enjoy things. Mm-hmm. Because there was like a whole year that went by that I wasn't thinking about work that much.
Right.
And so that was nice. And then getting to watch something like the movies that made us and remembering that the process can be fun, mm-hmm. because if there is something that good for me that came out of COVID, it would be getting a chance to take a step back. Like, I'm only talking about work here.
Right.
Taking a step back and figuring out what it is I really want to be doing and remembering that it can be fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get so obsessed with the results that you forget that the process of doing something was always supposed to be fun. And like for me, that had kind of gotten lost along the way because producing is really hard. And you're like fixing everyone else's problems all the
time.
Right,
right.
And
that sounds awful.
I think, like, ultimately, yeah, it is. Ultimately, it made me want to this all made me want to focus more on my own projects. So at least I'm just like fixing my own mistakes.
Right, right.
not everyone else's.
Right. I mean, I figure at some point there's got to be where you want, if you're a creative person, you want to stop putting other people's work out there and start working on your own regardless, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are people who love producing other people's work only, but I think ultimately even those people want more of a stake in the process, like in the beginning of the process, whether it's developing the thing from the start and then seeing it to the finish, or, you know, I think it's most people ultimately want more skin in the game, not less.
Right.
Because I think you end up realizing that it's always so much work and it's always so risky. So if you're going to risk it, you might as well be taking the risk on yourself.
Right. I mean, that, when you break it down, it makes sense when you break it down like that. It's actually like, sounds very simple. Like, When you break it down that way, it makes total sense. I just had another. Are you gonna be in any of your own films? Are you gonna do like this whole? What will this show?
Well, with Rush Island, I definitely wrote a couple of funny smaller parts that I could cameo in.
Nice.
If someone will let me, we'll see. Right. I mean, I feel like I could, I mean, I'm also producing it, so I could just make that happen, I guess.
Right. right.
But, you know, other people have to agree. And some of the newer things that I am writing that are just kind of nuggets that haven't been totally fleshed out yet. Yeah, I think I'm going to start writing in parts for myself. I really miss.
Nice.
I miss performing and, you know, I love to make people laugh and do, especially if it's something that's a little unexpected.
Right. That'd be all. You could do the old, you know, little Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah. or Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks, right? Oh man, Mel Brooks, right? That'd be
man.
Oh.
He's 95 years old, I think.
Wow.
And he is still totally with it.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I think like William Shatner is—he's like 90,
he's
right?
He's 90. Yeah.
He just like went to space. It's ridiculous. Amazing. I heard a story from this comic book creator who was at a Comic Con with him, and he said that right before he went to space, he was seated next to William Shatner, and he said, "Oh, you know, Mr. Shatner, I just want to congratulate you on going to space." And he goes, "Oh, don't congratulate me yet. They haven't brought me back." Oh, man.
That's great.
Yeah. Man, I hope that I'm that with it when I'm that old. I don't think I'm that with it now, honestly. Like,
I'm not all the time.
Right. Yeah. Shit.
Sometimes I just got too much going on and in my head, and I, you know, can't keep it all straight.
Yeah, my head is like, it's like cartoon characters running around in my head all day long. Like, it's just the stupid stuff that goes on in my head that it doesn't stop. I would probably like have been diagnosed with ADD if I was like growing up now.
Yeah, I mean, I have ADHD, but I never, like, I didn't grow up in an environment where you would be medicated for it or anything. Yeah. You just, like, have to learn how to deal.
Right. So you didn't even get the benefits of it. Right, yeah. It's like, yeah. What the fuck is the point of this diagnosis then? Just leave me alone.
I know. No, it's okay. I think, like, sometimes the... No, I like having the diagnosis because I can understand why I'm behaving a certain way.
Oh, that makes sense.
I have something to blame it on.
Right.
If like, you know, but at the same time, I think it has helped me be able to multitask. And I think like I've learned how to make it work sometimes. And then other times I wish I could sit and focus on the thing. And that's where that Adderall would definitely come in handy. I'm not about to start now.
Right. Yeah, that ship sailed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just never got diagnosed because my parents were just like, no doc. You're like, you're not going to a doctor. Just, you know, here's some ice. Ice or like, I mean, I grew up in an Italian family, so like it was food. Like you just ate. As a matter of fact, like my oldest son, years ago, had a traumatic brain injury. He's fine now, but he was like in the hospital and he just had brain surgery and he was just starting to talk to people and stuff. And my dad called and he was talking to my dad, and my dad's like, "Oh, I'll come see you and bring you some meatballs." Like that. Like, I was just like, all right, dad, like just me. That's like my family. Meatballs are like the cure all for everything.
Food is love.
Yeah. I mean, they are good meatballs. I gotta be honest. So,
well, thank God. Oh, you wouldn't want to be in the hospital eating bad meatballs.
Oh, yeah. Nah. So, yeah. So, what's gonna come? What do you get? What else do you have going on? I mean, obviously, it's a lot. I mean, so for me to say like what else do you have going on is, you know, sounds ridiculous. But what else do you have going on after this movie comes out? Yeah, I mean, like I'm just like. If I told you like everything I had going on, this podcast would have been like 5 minutes. I'd just be like, "Oh yeah, trying to eat healthier," and I watched like 6 episodes of Golden Girls today.
I'm not sure what my next immediate thing will be. I'm trying to figure that out. You know, and I'm hoping that it's whatever the next iteration of adult sex ed is. I hope I get to do that next. Mm-hmm. But I filmed something this summer that I really enjoyed working on. And it was interesting. It was one of the hardest projects I've ever worked on. And no, it was the hardest. I'm going to go with the hardest.
Wow.
And COVID had nothing to do with that.
Really?
No, it was just hard.
Wow.
And But I felt very lucky to be working because I had so many friends that didn't get a chance to work at all during right. this. And, you know, I got paid some and got to develop something new. And it was a very strange opportunity for me because I was commissioned to co-create and produce a pilot. And the only parameters, it was really just like one piece of criteria, and it's that it had to be about investing in women. And it had to be a documentary series. And we just got to be really creative and take it in a direction where it was still about investing in women, but it's something that I would really want to watch. And we ended up shooting the pilot for a show that's tentatively called This Is She. And we went into really insular industries and profiled women who have like totally unique jobs and really special access into that field. And they could take us into their lives and we could spend some time with them and figure out more about their industry that like we just naturally don't know very much about. And like, you know, figure out like why these women who are like some of the most intellectually adventurous women in the world, why right. they are, why they're rising, even though maybe their industries are really falling behind. So for the pilot, we shot one story in Philadelphia with a chess and poker champion. And that was super interesting. First of all, those games are very different from each other. Right. But what I think is super cool is that those are games that men use to network.
And wait, this was one person who was a champion of both? Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's a champion of both.
Wow.
And it was just so fun to spend time with her and find out more about her life. And she's also the head of U.S. Chess Women. So she's trying to make chess more accessible to women and girls all over the world. And, you know, and then we went to Central California, where I've now filmed a few things in right. this like one particular area. And we filmed at a women-owned and Native American-owned winery and did a story about women and wine. Because women still make up just a fraction of the wine industry. And we wanted to find out why. And also filming at a winery was so much fun. So it was a really, both of these stories ended up being really inspiring. And not in a corny way. It's just like these women live really intentionally. And that was cool for me to see because it's so easy for like the details of your own life to kind of get away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool to see how they plan their time and how they choose to spend their time. And they, even though they work a lot, they have like a great balance and their personal lives were just as important to them. And it was just like beautiful. They had like beautifully curated lives.
Sounds like you would have been a good subject for this.
No, I don't think so.
No,
no, because if you went to film my day to day, it's like pretty boring, and it's not like, especially during COVID. Like here we are filming with these women during COVID, and they're still out. Like they're still because they have to be, and I would have been very boring during this because like even now, like like you can't see what I'm wearing, but like I kind of look like an 80s aerobics instructor. I'm wearing like these weird leggings and like, you know, I'm not as curated. That's literally what I look like right now.
That's awesome. I'm
not going to stand up, but
that's a good look. I mean, you know, not many people could pull that off. So kudos to you.
Well, thank you. But yeah, it was a really good experience on multiple levels. So I'm hoping that that's a project that I get to continue with. That would be something that would be nice to you know, documentary is not normally my thing, but getting to do that and meet all of these amazing people and then make movies in, you know, throughout the year also, that would be amazing. So we'll see.
Did this get picked up at all? Or
not yet. We are still finishing the pilot.
Oh, okay.
Because that's, you know, another thing about all of this is it all takes so much longer than you think it's going to.
Right. Especially now, like,
yeah,
COVID times. Okay. So you have a new website. Where can everybody find you? And then tell everybody about one more time about adult sex ed and your show on Tuesday.
Yeah. So I'll start with that. Tuesday, February 15th. Mistress's Day.
Mm-hmm.
7 p.m. is Adult Sex Ed. It's at Caveat, which is 21A Clinton Street on the Lower East Side. And you could buy tickets on Caveat's website, which is caveat.nyc. I have a new website where you could find out more about me. It's DannyLeonard.com. And then you could find me on social media. And I'm on... I really just use Twitter and Instagram, and you could find me at Danny F. Leonard or Danny Flennard if you want to read it.
Danny Flennard. Yeah. Caveat is a great place, and Adult Sex Ed is a great show. So if you end up attending, you will not be disappointed.
Yeah. And if you do, please come say hi to me.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too. Everybody's like afterwards very accessible and very friendly. It's just a good, vibe and a great like environment and just a cool time. I think I've been to the show twice, so hopefully a third time if we lose this weekend.
Well, sounds like I'll probably see you on Tuesday.
Yeah. We're 2-9, so. All right. Hopefully, Danny, I'll get to see you Tuesday. Thank you. I love your show. It's amazing. So I'm sad to see it change in a way, but excited at the same time to see like what's going to come next. And I'm excited for your film Coast too. So
thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on. The first four-time guest. And yeah, hopefully let's get together in person sometime when possible. If I don't see you on Tuesday.
Yes. And also, hopefully my fifth time on the show will be in studio.
Yes. Yes. Or you know, depending where you're at, maybe be on location.
Yes. Yes. Let's put that out there.
Okay. We might, yeah, that'd be good.
That'd be fun.
And we could discuss our new 8 Mile movie that we're going to put out about Jeff Fenner's, life.
Can we just call it like 7 Mile? So it's not as good.
Right. God, I can't wait for them to hear this. All right. Danny, hopefully I'll see you Tuesday. Everybody, once again, please stay safe. Follow Danny everywhere. Danny Flennard. Follow her everywhere. If you can make it to Adult Sex Ed on Tuesday, if you have a mistress, take her. Just whatever, man. Like, it's, you know, live your life. But please do that. Everybody stay safe. And once again, thanks for rocking with us. And let's chip in and buy Will a new camera for his computer. All right. Peace.